Hope you're ready. Here we go.
It's gonna be. You think it's gonna be a long one? It might be too long. Welcome, welcome. We are back. Oh, you've done now. I have to get the mic engaged for me for the first bit.
Yeah, David insists that his face be the first thing everybody sees. It's in this contract. So
it's just because it's the first voice, and sometimes it takes a second for it to figure out what's going on. Okay, we should be good. Welcome, welcome. We are back for another edition of The Lock-In. We have a very special guest who has lots of bracelets, so many, in fact, that the last time he was on the show, I didn't remember what that number was. Dominic Nietzsche, welcome.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me. It's nice to talk to some people.
It's always nice to have some company. Dara, welcome to you, too.
Yeah, thank you. Delighted to be here. I've had my weekly or my fortnightly shave for the lock-in.
We'll go weekly if your wife requests it, Dara.
Yeah.
Well, look, we have so much to talk about. The last time we put out an episode, it was almost like the next 2 days was all the news came out. So we sort of mistimed it, I guess. So we've lots to discuss. The first thing I want to talk to both of you about and get your perspectives on is that never-ending saga with Mike Possehl. It took a very weird development right after we put out the last show. You might remember the last time we spoke, we talked about how Phil Gelfond and Berkey had put together a sort of virtual workshop to go over all the televised hand, create some HUD stats that would really, you know, put a nail in the coffin of how much they were convinced he's a huge statistical outlier. And I suppose the more we got into the hundreds of millions and billions to one, the more it would appear that, let's be honest, something looks a bit odd here. Now, that has taken a very weird turn. It may be very important that these guys do their proper work now, Dara, because in the days since, there has been a defamation suit. Again, I'm very proud of the fact that we're not named on the defamation suit, Dara, because I think I said allegedly enough times.
Last week. I think it's just because they couldn't understand our accents, to be honest, but...
Well, I am going to read it carefully with the words allegedly on occasion, because there has been a defamation suit by Possehl against Veronica Brill, ESPN, Joe Ingram, Heraldus Vulgaris, Daniel Negreanu, Upswing Poker, Poker News and Ibis Media, Crush Live Poker, Jonathan Little Holdings. we've also got on there Sulphur Y Academy, that's Berkey & Co, Todd Whittles, Run It Once, and... Does 1 through 1,000 inclusive the defendants? That is a long list of defendants, my God. And he wants a trial by jury. Dara, why does he want a trial by jury?
I think we kind of touched on this on the last lock-in, which is that the kind of evidence which was allegedly against him was the kind of evidence which wouldn't really wash with a jury. It was very statistical, data-driven, and we're not really statistical, data-driven creatures unless we're expert in that area. So I suspect that's part of the reason. I was quite interested when the case came out because I can't remember who one of the defendants said, but it's obviously frivolous. So I thought, okay, well, why is he bringing it down? Is it just a publicity stunt or whatever? But I actually spoke to a friend of mine who's a lawyer in New York who has some sort of expertise in this area. He's mostly involved in mediation now on the mediation side rather than going to court with this sort of stuff. But based on what I told him, he said he thought there was actually a chance that this lawsuit could be successful, which was quite shocking to me. And if that happens, I think there will be uproar in the poker world. But he said that, you know, given that Possehl hasn't been found guilty of anything, and the cases against him have been thrown out, anybody stating categorically that he's cheating is crossing a line. And actually, the more people that do it, the worse it is, because then it looks like sort of workplace bullying in a sense. At this stage, I'm starting to wonder if the whole thing is just a sort of a conspiracy among the lawyers, because they must be loving this. Lawyers on both sides are the ones getting rich, and there's nobody else seems to be getting anything out of it.
That's a good point. Well, Dom, you haven't weighed in on this one too vociferously, I think, or maybe you have on your social media and whatnot, but certainly not on a show as prestigious, and maybe the only show that will be left when all this is done and dusted, The Lock-In.
I might as well get our names on that list, huh? you could have seen this coming, I think. It's America, you know, they do things differently over there. It's easy to get sued for things in America. That's common knowledge, I think, for most people. And yeah, I think if we take our emotions as poker players out of this, and the act, You know, some poker players will say he obviously cheated, but in the real world, you don't get to do this to people. And if this goes to trial, I'm not betting on the poker player guys as much evidence as they have. And in the jury trial, as you guys said, people don't get it. You've seen people play poker. Do you really expect them to understand what is going on here? No, of course not. So, yeah, while I, you know, as a poker player would side with the poker players, this is not a poker player thing. And I think those guys, they might be in serious trouble because this is a serious lawsuit. And yeah, I'm afraid Mike Posse might win, as unjust as we might think this is, but this is the justice system in America.
Indeed, yeah, no, it is worrying times for those guys, and it is quite a big suit. I think it's like $350 million. Bootree Fiddy is what he's looking for. So, you know, even if they try and settle something like that, and ESPN's obviously the biggest name on the card there with money behind them, that is a lot of money. Want to move on to, it's going to be another scandal, isn't it? Because we just love it. I'm going to give details on this one because not everybody might know this story. There were some shenanigans on the Midway Poker Tour. Our good pal Chad Holloway for Poker News covered this event. So we do have some firsthand information on what was sort of going down on the ground. What happened? Well, last Friday, the inaugural, and let's face it, probably the last Midway Poker Tour, took place in the Chicagoland area. There was a 1,100 buy-in. It was a two-day event, and there were 266 runners. There was a charity component. I think the charity Kids, or For Kids' Sake, was part and parcel of the whole thing. So fair play, I guess. The tournament was held in multiple ballrooms to comply with COVID regulations. So they tried to do a kind of 50 person per room thing, sort of reintroduce poker, I guess, in that area. When 31 people reached the money, a problem arose. The min cash was 2,300, but according to Illinois Charitable Gaming Acts and Regulations, organizers were only able to pay out 500 above the cost of the buy-in, so €1,600. How would they pay the difference? Quite big a difference it was going to be as well for, remember, people on the final table and whatnot. Precious metals is the answer to that. They were going to be paid in silver doubloons. By Sunday, the organizers decided that the only way around this was going the metal route. They purchased 208K in silver from the totally not suspiciously named Andy Metal. That's not a joke. The idea was players would receive their prize and be given contact information of how they could sell back the metal off-site. Problem with this is obvious. All the players now had to find a willing buyer for their unwanted silver. The tournament did decide to play it out. I thought the players might reach some kind of deal, but they did decide to play it out. And in the end, and we're getting kind of conflicting reports at the moment, but people have more or less sold their metal for about a 20% overall loss. So that's a deep rake. Midway Poker Tour owner, founder, Dan Bavacic, who was initially... he did a bit of a vanishing act, did take to social media to explain how tough it's all been on him. Dara?
Yeah, hopefully we better be careful what we say about him because he might bring a lawsuit against everybody who suggests he did anything even slightly dishonest in all of this. Yeah, I mean, it's some of the details are quite funny, but obviously it's a serious story because people thought they were entering a proper poker tournament with proper payouts, and that did not turn out to be the case. One thing which always kind of amuses me is that it seems to me like people have very long memories when it comes to online poker and any sort of dodginess that happens online, but very short memories when it comes to live poker. I was thinking about this morning before we came on, and actually I've known quite a few live scandals down the years that I've been involved, even in Ireland. I mean, you probably remember stuff like the Leprechaun Poker, Irish Poker, Irish Poker Open.
You could go to the petrol station, couldn't you, and get extra chips on the way in?
Yeah. There was another tour where, every petrol station within about 40 miles was selling chips to the tournament before you got there at a hefty discount. So live poker has always had this unsavory aspect, unfortunately. A lot of it is down to it not being very well regulated. Pretty much anybody can run a poker tournament, and often it doesn't necessarily attract the most scrupulous types, let's say. Everything about this story is kind of funny when you think that they were basically paying them out in doubloons, which, I mean, nothing says pirate like the fact that they're dealing in doubloons, but it's still obviously very tragic for the players who are involved. There is an appetite now, I think, for people to want to get back to live poker. People are worried maybe that the ecosystem has long-term damage. But I think, to be honest, there is a fairly strong appetite for it to come back, but it's difficult with all the new regulations. And I kind of feel like part of the problem is people are trying to force back before it's really wise to be playing live poker again.
Indeed. Well, Dominic, I want to come to you on this one. So actually, there was one other small detail, was that the organizer was trying to get people to sign up to his poker app club. That poker app club, as in, I think, random, or just sort of not wanting them to do it. This is a little extra spicy detail. But Dom, I suppose maybe to kind of, rather than get into the nuts and bolts of this one, I want to talk about scandals in general. And I suppose, of course, journalists and poker people should report anything bad that happens. And we do have scandals from time to time. We do have quite a few, to be fair, from time to time. They crop up. But are we shooting ourselves in the foot as an industry, covering them so much, like putting such a strong spotlight on every single little thing and sort of blowing them up into these huge stories? Are we ultimately just like wrecking our own game?
Are we going into the other scandal now, or?
No, we have time for this one and then we'll move on.
Well, because I think it depends on what the scandal is, right? There is this other scandal that we're going to talk about soon, and then this one, I think this one's just, I mean, I feel bad for the guys involved, but I really thought it was very funny. The first time I read it, I was laughing quite hard for a couple of minutes. And the threat on 2 plus 2 kept getting better. No, I think like this kind of scandal needs to be reported on. People need to be aware of the risk of going to play a tournament where they pay out in silver coins to circumvent regulations. People need to be aware that they shouldn't play in places where those are the rules. You know, if you play in places where those are the rules, stuff like that is going to happen. If you play in shady underground games on an app or something, you will get cheated. If you do play a tournament where they pay you out in fantasy coins, where they make you sign up for their home game club so they can rate you again, you'll get cheated. This is not surprising. This was just bound to happen.
Yeah,
I mean, it's sad because those people don't have any other options because they don't have casinos and they miss live poker. But yeah, if the option is this, where you get basically guaranteed to get cheated or not playing at all, many people are going to choose this, and it's actually really sad. Yeah.
Well, okay, we've worked up to it. We've built up the drum rolls already. I can hear us.
Yeah.
We do want to talk about the RTA scandal, which of course involved Federer Cruz initially, or at least that was sort of the name that was mentioned as this type of thing was coming out. Players have been banned by GG in the last few days. Last week, GG issued a public statement. I'm going to read it. We have rededicated our efforts to combat RTA and have swiftly adopted enhanced RTA detection methods and improved our internal processes for handling these cheaters. Through our upgraded detection methods, we have discovered a small group of RTA users on GGPN. We have taken immediate action on those accounts as we continue to develop our processes. The site claims to have recently banned dozens of accounts for RTA use, 1.2 million confiscated from 13 individuals, and apparently another 40 accounts have been issued warnings. Now, as we've said several times on the show, the problem of RTA is going to be one of the toughest facing the industry. I think integrity teams, security teams are going to find this a bit of an uphill battle as we go forward. But I'm interested to get your perspective on this one, because they haven't given a lot of detail. Now, there's two good reasons for that, perhaps. GDPR is one. And the second one is, if they do have advanced methods and their processes and whatnot, they don't want to reveal them because maybe that's going to, you know, immediately hand over what they're doing to the potential perpetrators. But I do want to get you in on this, Dom, because I know you know some people that this has happened to, and there is another side to this story.
Right. I mean, there with that statement, I don't even know where to start. There is so much to it. You know, for me as a person in the high stakes community, as the guy who runs DTO Poker, I know firsthand of like tons of people who got caught up in this, and I think it's important that we start at the beginning, because if we now start with their statement, I think we're missing out the point, like, why now? We need to first really think about why is this happening now, and why is GG Poker suddenly issuing warnings to 80 people? And the first thing is always that, like, how this started. It started with Fedor Kruse, who was in some way affiliated with Natural Aid, even though they claim he wasn't affiliated with Natural Aid. I think he was affiliated with Natural Aid, given that his name was in gold, and you know, you don't get a gold name on that site if you're not affiliated with the site. Anyway, so this is how this started. There's the whole Fedor Cruz scandal that ended up blowing up, and people were giving GG Poker a lot of heat. And then suddenly we don't hear anything for a while, and then GG Poker comes out with this new statement. And I've thought about this a lot, obviously, and there's a couple of things that are really wrong with it. First of all, the first problem is, how do you define RTA? And this already becomes a problem because, let's face it, if you read their statement, they don't really have a clue what they're talking about. They don't know what RTA is. They just say like, anything we don't like is RTA, and we're gonna use that to get rid of 80 accounts. Well, here's the thing. They are expecting us to believe that they developed a cheating detecting system in a mere couple of weeks, yet they had someone on their site using actual RTA, plugging hands into PyroSolver on his computer next to him. They couldn't catch that guy who's been running that in their games, been destroying the games. They couldn't catch him until the guy got reported, which is a real issue. But now they suddenly found a way to detect 80 other accounts that supposedly have something like that. Like, what? I want to start with this, and then it's going to go back and forth a couple of times, but this to me just doesn't seem real. It seems to me like they're lumping it all under the RTA kind of umbrella. They're like, here, oh, you guys used RTA. You have to go, and you have to go, and you have to go. But when the real issue here is that one guy has been doing it for months using actual in-game assistance, which is not starting hand shards or any other nonsense people want you to believe. No, the guy is putting hands in a solver that he has pre-solved, and then he's accessing the solutions. That's the problem. The problem is not starting hand shards. Starting hand shards don't make you a huge winner, so we should ignore those. But no, people have been like all caught up in this. No, this is RTA and this is RTA. But we should focus on the real issue, which is real-time solvers that can't be prevented. And I can assure you that in tournaments, people don't have these real-time solvers yet. So like, some of the people that got banned either got banned for something else, but they did not get banned for running a program like Fedor Cruz. That's a fact.
Well, Darren, I want to bring you in on this because we've obviously spent 2 weeks or two episodes at least on this one. Tom Hall was very descriptive and helpful in sort of unpacking what you had said the previous week as well, and unpacked also for us, which was sort of, one, what is an RTA, which I think is important, obviously people want to know that. Two, what are the limits of it? And you did actually do a little Twitter poll during the week where you sort of wanted people's perspective, the everyman perspective on, you know, where should the line be? And I'm interested, one, what was the result of that poll? And two, how does it affect your thinking, or does your thinking just stay the same anyway?
Yeah, I was interested to see where people would draw the line because, I mean, you can take a really, really strict view of RTA, and then even if you have a post-it on your computer saying fold ace queen to a 3-bet every time, that's that could be conceived as RTA. You have hand charts telling you which hands to open from different seats, which I think it's fair to say quite a few people use, and not just regs, but recs as well. Some of the recs I coach are open about the fact that they use those because they don't consider them to be real-time assistance in any meaningful sense of the word. Poker Stars, I believe, take the view that's fine as well. It's fine to use opening charts, but nothing else. Then you have, you know, well, what if I'm accessing a database of PO solutions that I've run myself? That's sort of the next level up. And then the final level is where you have an actual full real-time assistant solver, which is running the search for you, scraping your screen. And it was quite interesting because the poker world seemed quite polarized on this. A lot of people just took a really hard line and said even charts are wrong, and that's real-time assistance. It tended to fall between those two groups. People either thought everything is wrong, or people thought it's only wrong if you're using a program which is accessing solutions and coming back with basically telling you what to do. Very few people were sort of taking the middle line, and that was the result of that poll.
And it's also fair to say that middle line is pretty consistent with what is policeable. Would you agree with that, Dom?
Yeah, sorry, I just want to cut in there. I think we can argue about this for hours. Like, where's the line? Where's the line? And I think what happens here is I thought about this, and really we just end up doing the operator a favor here, because they're the ones who can then say, blanket statement, this is RTA, you did something against RTA, you're gone. If starting hand shots are not policeable, as Dara correctly said, so we are wasting time and energy here arguing about whether a starting hand shot is the issue. A starting hand shot is not going to make or break a poker player. The problem is a program like the one Fedor Kruse had. That's going to like really beat everyone. You're not going to, you know, recreationals use starting hand shots. We can argue about this for hours. It's not going to change. I personally don't use any because I memorized. That's not the point. The point is the problem here is real RTA. It's like people like allegedly 40N7 and Obora, accounts that have been banned on Stars for a while for running this. Those Fedor Kruse, the newest example, those accounts, they play perfectly post flop. The worry isn't pre flop. It's someone with a starting hand shot, he's not gonna beat me anyway. You can give a recreational a starting hand shot, they have no chance. So people get too sidetracked by their obsession with charts. You know, a chart, it's only a tiny bit of help. And like when I see like the newest Daniel Negreanu poll about whether a starting hand shot should be allowed, you are completely missing the point of what RTA is. And if we have want any way of this being taken serious, we should ask for this to be taken serious. And we shouldn't like allow operators to say like, oh, starting hand shots, they're the same as running a post-flop program, because it's not. Like, one will actively ruin the game, and the other one is just used by recreationals, so they play a little bit better. Like, a starting hand shot isn't a big deal. I mean, sure, I would like it if people don't use it, but at the end of the day, I would like a site to police that, you know, people don't use actual assistance, which is post-flop solves. I don't care too much about a starting hand shot.
Yeah, one thing I'd like to say is that I've spoken to a few people in the industry, and they've suggested that the way they, in inverted commas, catch cheaters is if they find people who always play the same way. Now, that's a really bad way to go about something, particularly preflop, because very experienced preflop players will have correct opening ranges and correct three betting ranges, whether they're looking at a chart or not. But some of the sites seem to be taking the view, well, if somebody always opens exactly the same range of hands from every seat, from a particular seat, then they must be using real-time assistance. This used to go on in the running world as well. They used to try and catch runners based on things like levels of testosterone in their body and so on. But then they found that there were certain female athletes, for example, who just have abnormally high levels of testosterone naturally. Similarly, on the poker side, you have some people who are just very, very good preflop, and they will literally never make a mistake. Then there's the cash tournament divide, because obviously opening ranges change depending on ICM the deeper you get into a tournament. So if you're looking at a tournament player, you could say, oh, he's fine because he's changing his opening range. He folded ace 10 there, but maybe he folded ace 10 because ICM was a factor. But cash game players presumably should always have the same ranges. And then if that is the justification that's being used, oh, they're playing too well, then that in itself biases the bands towards the better players, the winning players, which you know, might be in the interest of the site.
I have one more thing. As Dara correctly said, yeah, if you draw the line at playing too well, that's a problem in itself. But how do you define playing too well? In a poker tournament, poker tournaments are not solved, so it's sometimes impossible to say who's playing well, right? Because another option I heard suggested, and which is utter nonsense, is that sites allegedly have a program that checks everyone's line against Pyo Solver. That doesn't work. You can't check if someone's playing too well because Pyo Solver is dependent on the sizings you put in. So you would need to put in specific sizings across all 1,755 flops to then like check this, and then you need to see if like someone deviates. Like, no site is going through this effort. So it's not that. And yeah, there is no way to check if someone's even playing too well. And if you're going by someone playing too well pre-flop, that's just ridiculous. I mean, I can teach a seven-year-old to memorize a chart in a couple hours. And I think any professional player is above the line on playing pre-flop. And I think I might be one of the worst examples or of someone who can memorize a chart, but I think, yeah, it shouldn't be that. So how do you police that? How do you draw the line in playing too well?
Well, let's have a look at what sort of has happened. So obviously, GG are the ones who've come out with this big statement. They've banned these players. I spoke to one of those players just in the last few days. I won't say who it was. And he, it's fair to say, was fairly suspicious that there was sort of an ulterior motive here. He had a very good WSOP on their site. He had a couple of big scores, as far as I know. And he felt like there was a sort of a targeting thing. Now, I'm not saying that's what's happening. I have no information either side of that. But I know this player was concerned that was the case because he certainly feels like he's been wrongly targeted. He would certainly deny any accusations of him using an RTA. And as such, then felt, well, why are they coming after me? And, you know, he did have some good results and his money wasn't forthcoming. What would you say to that? Or do you think there's, you know, within the people you know within the industry, Dom, who this has affected, could a picture like that be built?
I mean, first of all, I think it's fair to make that assumption given the record of the provider. It's no secret that GG Poker has a history of banning winning players and banning people for bum hunting or making up other reasons to get rid of players they don't want. Certainly, if you dive a bit deeper into the issue, you will find that there will be a couple things that stand out between all the people that have been banned. The problem with this, though, is that you never get the whole picture as a player. They'll never tell you why they banned you. And yeah, I mean, I guess at this point, you just have to trust the operator to issue bans fairly and police the games well. As a player, you then have to decide, do I trust the site to do this fairly, or do I think this site might be up to no good? And then once you say that, then you have to weigh up the factors. Do I play on there or do I not play on there? And at the end of the day, everyone has to make that decision for themselves. One thing I do want to say, though, is that sites don't have the best interest for the players at heart. They're a business. They want to make money. So their interest isn't as much policing the games. Their interest is making money. So like the games run, you know, and there will be players that are bad for the game that take out too much money. They cash out in ways that like cost the operator money. For example, it's no secret that if you cash out via Skrill, the operator takes a bit hit and they might not like that. And if the sites don't want you on their site, they can get you gone and they can say it was for RTA. They can say it was for VPN. They can say it was for a number of reasons. But at the end of the day, you don't have any ground to stand on, because if a site wants you gone, you're gone. And it's just important to realize that it's not always about what they say it is, you know? Because the integrity of the games isn't nearly as important to the site as like the PR around it. For example, they can, with their 80 accounts banned, they can use this and spin it up as a PR thing, and they can say, we do something about this, we develop this in 2 weeks. But if you're an outsider looking at this, you'll be like, oh, that's good. GG Poker really does something. They ban hearts. They really prevent us amateurs. They're a good site. I'll play on there. But if you're in the know, you look at this statement and you just be like, yeah, this is all a bunch of nonsense. They just made this up. You know, RTA doesn't work like this, and a bunch of innocent people will get caught if this is how they do business. But, you know, perspective.
The aspect of this that sort of bothered me was that obviously there was a huge push by GG to get people onto the site for the World Series. They had, you know, a big guarantee to hit with the main event. They obviously wanted the thing to be a success. And in order for a tournament like that to be a success, or a series of tournaments like that to be a success, they need the pros to show up in big numbers. So they wanted all the money piled onto the site then. And now I just wonder, and this is again is just my curiosity, do they have an ecosystem issue? If all of these people are still around, yeah, are they now looking at sort of like, oh, we've sort of poisoned our ecosystem by just bringing on all the 1K players, and now we sort of have to figure out a way to get them off, or our system will be poisoned, and in a year from now, we'll have lost all our fish?
Yeah, I think this is an issue for all the sites that operate across a lot of different territories. And it's something which really, we didn't used to have this problem, because pre-Black Friday, you know, there was just one world global market. The players who came in played on an equal footing, no matter where they were coming from. Some players emerged as winners, players who lost too much disappeared from the ecosystem. But there was a constant turnover. So we were continually getting new players. Now with all these different protected markets or markets that are ring-fenced in some ways, you essentially have different player pools and different ecosystems. And any operator who's either operating legally in different pools or is bending the rules in some way, or like the apps is just completely ignoring the rules, a huge issue they have is that some ecosystems are just much stronger than others. So for example, I spoke to one person who works in an app, and they said that their biggest problem essentially is that the Scandinavians just win too much, the Germans win too much, the Australians and the Americans lose too much, and then the Asians just get beaten up by everybody. And there was another app which actually spent a lot of money launching in the US and attracted lots of players, and then a couple of months in realized that the American players they had attracted were all essentially pros, and they were winning at a fair clip against the Chinese and other Asians that were their main pool. So they literally pulled out of the US despite having spent a fortune trying to get in there. So this is a problem that GG is having because of the fact that they operate so globally, and they have maybe not put a lot of thought initially into their ecosystem. They've just thought, well, whatever happens, happens. But now they are kind of realizing if you bring in stronger players for something like the WSOP or whatever, and those players stay on and they win too much, then you have a serious problem. It's fair to say this should be a bigger problem on the cash side than on the tournament side. In tournament side, you can't really tell. I mean, you can tell over a very large sample who's winning, but you will still get players who are not very strong winning because of variance. But on the cash side, the weaker players just tend to lose their money very fast. But the interesting thing is that this latest bunch of bans seems to be focused on a lot of tournament players. And, you know, there are times, I play on a number of different sites, and there are times where I look like an absolute shark on one site and an absolute whale on another site just because of variance. I'm playing exactly the same on both sites, but you know, variance being what it is, you know, over a tournament sample size. So if they're just trying to say, oh, you're winning too much, they might not even be getting the right types of players.
Yeah, great point, Dara, and I appreciate it. And I also have to say, I do appreciate your honesty and straightforwardness with all of this, Dom. I know, obviously, as the owner of DTO and as very much part of the GTO movement, which is sort of on trial right now, this is not an easy story. It's definitely affecting you, and this is very much going to be something that I guess you're going to spend a lot of time on for the next few months.
I mean, certainly, the reason I agreed to come on here is obviously because I know a little bit about the whole RTA thing, and I just wanted to clarify a couple of things where, yeah, people are obviously very, very mistaken. And as I said before, this whole thing about mixing up charts with RTA and stuff, I think it's important that someone who actually is in the know comes on and yeah, just sets the record straight and also shines a bit of light, because what Dara said is important. They will end up banning a bunch of accounts that might not be bad for the ecosystem if they take this route we think they might be going down. And that's a whole other problem I didn't touch on. But I think they factor in a number of other things as well, like including like which games people play, like their registration behavior, like all other things. So like I think winning is just part of it. You know, I think if you go on a heater, you're probably not just gonna get banned. But it might just be like one part, you know. And maybe we'll figure it out, but I really doubt we're going to figure out the real answer behind these bans anytime.
Well, I'm going to turn the conversation to something a little bit lighter. We've had a trio of fairly heavy topics there. So I want to talk for a little bit about the quite hilarious exchanges on Twitter between Phil Galfond and Phil Helmut, and pretty much everyone did a bit of a pile-on. Last week, Phil Galfond got his notepad out to do one of those long tweets, sort of in the wake of Phil Helmut winning that 200K heads up against Antonio Sfandiari in what was a very entertaining, I will say, episode of The Duel. I've got to say, we rode the coattails of this matchup with our admittedly light in strategy, heavy in entertainment video. Go check it out on our YouTube channel, Phil Helmut Strategy White Magic segment. But in Galfond's tweet, he said, I'm going to again read from it, "For me personally, my perception of Phil as a player, this heads-up performance was by far the most impactful accomplishment of his illustrious career. I'd like to formally apologise to Phil Helmut for how long it took me to realise how talented he is. Almost sounds a bit trolly, but he was being genuine. He can do all the ridiculous fouls he wants from now on, and I promise I'll still respect his game. Gelfand was then met with a barrage of criticism. First in was Olivier Bousquet, who said, easily one of the silliest things I've ever read from someone I respect. Misses the point on almost every substantive issue, and an actual formal apology to the most obnoxious, disrespectful, self-promoted egomaniac in our industry, microphone syndrome. Now, we all know, on one side you got Phil Galfond, but on the other side of that beast, is Farah Galfond, who takes no shit and no prisoners. And she quickly jumped in with a notepad tweet of her own saying, hello, if I'm reading your tweet correctly, Olivier, it's not very well written, in my humble opinion. You are comparing my husband's opinion on someone's poker abilities to having a traumatic brainwashing disorder. So here I am. Poker is not a personality contest, but Phil Helmuth has actually marketed himself as the brat for decades, like a wrestling character. It makes for entertaining TV, and only people with sticks up their asses should truly care about his antics and let these antics affect them personally. Look, there was so much interaction on this. I actually can't really do justice to this thread because it just went, the game tree of this one is more complicated than any solver's output. But the one last person I will mention is Fedor Holtz, who said he punted every 300K. So I don't share your view. I think he's a clear losing player in tougher lineups, but mostly plays a style that exploits versus tighter, weaker opponents and WSOP old school player tendencies. That obviously did upset Phil, who said, I wasn't expecting you to attack me, Fedor. Personally, I always have respect for the generation that came before me, respect for the guys that plowed the road for me. But yes, it is true. I did punt two or three 300K. Okay. That is all I'm going to read, I promise. There's no more, but do check out that thread if you haven't. Here's my take. It is all WWE marketing spin for what I think is going to be loads of jewels. This is a TV show they want to market 200K heads-ups, 400K heads-ups, maybe $1 million heads-ups by the time it gets really interesting. And there's obviously loads of people. Olivier, who's a heads-up specialist. Fedor, who, okay, probably isn't a heads-up specialist, but maybe fancies taking on some of the old school in some big money games. Is this maybe just their way of hyping up future games? Or do you think there's something really going on here? Dom, you go first.
I don't understand why someone as good as Phil is picking a couple of hands from a Helmuth match and saying they were played well and he had a good read. I don't understand. Yeah, I didn't follow this too much. I had like other things going on, you know. I might have to sit this one out.
Yeah, you had a busy week.
That was a bit of this whole thing. I looked at it. I was like, not this again.
Yeah, not this again. Yeah.
What did you make of it, Dara? Or should I actually point out that you didn't even know what this was until I told you about it?
I was vaguely familiar. I saw Fedor's tweet, and I actually, before we came on the air, I just retweeted one of my old blogs written 7 years ago in response to what was then a sort of a war that had broken out between the old school and the new school. And this just keeps coming back. I'm really surprised that as Dom said, that Phil Galfond looked at one heads-up match and decided that Phil Helmut clearly knows what he's doing now, and apologized for ever having doubted the greatness of Phil. I do remember Phil taking a pop at Fedor as well back in the day, saying that, pointing out, or I don't even know whether this is true anymore, but that Fedor's record in big field events with lots of recreational players isn't particularly good. I always find these like who's better at who poker matchups is pretty tedious, because we're never comparing like with like anyway, and we're all very self-selecting in what we regard as good at poker. You know, we tend to pick the format that we're best at, the field size that we're best at, all that stuff. And in general, I mean, I watched a Danny DeVore's video recently, and he was reviewing a major online final table, and I was impressed that at the start he actually took time and said, look, I'm going to be criticizing some plays here, but I'm not criticizing the players. I'm just criticizing individual plays that they may have made. So please don't take it personally. And I do think sometimes poker players look at somebody and they see them do one thing wrong or one thing which they think is wrong, and they just go, oh, he's shit at poker. And then they look at somebody else and they see them do something which they think is great, and suddenly they're brilliant at poker. It's a little bit too binary on that aspect. We can never really tell. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about winning money. If you win money in the long term, then you are by definition a successful poker player. If you lose money, you are by definition not a successful poker player. And getting into these dick swinging contests about who's better at who than what, it's good entertainment, I guess, for the masses. It's not a big thing in the big scheme of things.
Yeah, I like how you put it there, Derek, because obviously if Messi gives the ball away in midfield, people aren't going to go, oh, yeah, Look, he's a fucking shit player, he's terrible. They're obviously just going to go, oh, the best player in the world can make a mistake once in a while. And, you know, obviously everyone is fallible. And I like how you put it the way Daniel on commentary said it. We must steal that line and use that and next time we get to commentate some live poker. But maybe extrapolating from that, and I'll come to you on this, Dom. Dara's rightly put it down there. Like, you know, people are better at different forms of the game. People accentuate the things they tend to be good at. And these are sort of pretty silly dick swinging contests. But is there anything we can garner from this above and beyond just the most famous people all chiming in on one subject? I guess just because maybe Phil gets them riled and Phil Galfond is so respected, and it was a funny combination of those two things.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I agree with Dara very much that why are we wasting our time comparing people, how good they are? I don't want to go down this route again, and it's, I mean, at the end of the day, if like someone asked me, would you rather play Fedor heads up for 200k, or would you rather play Phil Hellmuth heads up for 200k, I wouldn't think twice about it.
Do you hear that, Phil? He wants a piece of you right now. We have another one.
I mean,
we get a piece of this, don't we?
Get me on the duel. Yes, no, but I obviously would play the duel against Phil Hellmuth, and
You heard it here first?
Yeah, there's no secret. I think there's a couple other people in line before me that are trying to get on. I don't think I get first crack at it. But, hey, Phil Hellmuth is obviously, yeah, he's played No Limit Hold'em tournaments all his career, and he's done well. He's played some super high rollers and he's not done well. None of those things are really particularly surprising to me.
He's won it also 19 heads up games. That's a stat.
Yeah. That's not a relevant stat, but it's a stat. It's just one of those things where, okay, he plays poker, he wins at poker. Good for him. You know, he doesn't play in particularly tough games. Like, I'm sorry, but it's not an accomplishment to beat like a $1,000 no limit field. It's pretty easy. What is impressive, though, when I say that, is I give him credit for figuring all of the strategies out on his own, because that's not easy. It's not particularly hard to get to a level where you can beat thousands, 1500s at the World Series. What is hard is if you're the first guy who actually develops new groundbreaking strategy, and to have then that be applicable to the games. So like what Hellmuth did in like, you know, years ago, that's worthy of respect. But nowadays, he's just another wreck. You know, the only reason we pay attention to him is because of his antics and his former success.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is. He gets a lot of credit for like developing new strategies and stuff, and for really being like ahead of his time. But that doesn't make him a great player 10 years later.
Well, that should be the final word on it, but I'm actually going to give the final word to Shane Schlager, who I thought tweeted beautifully. He said, just to focus on one lame aspect of this tweet, this was in relation to Fedor specifically. He said, why would you tap the glass at someone who punts 300Ks? Anyway,
should be the final word.
We're going to move on to DTO again, and sort of their new release. You've teased us in the last few days. You have teased the release of a triumvirate of new features. You announced a web version, which will excite people and worry others, I'm sure. You have said
it's not RTA. Sorry. Go on.
You have said that you will be able to view entire range from every node on the game tree, which is very interesting, and I want you to explain that, and that there is another secret feature coming, and I want you to give us that exclusive as well.
Yeah, obviously super excited for that. I think the web version, you know, everyone's been asking for it, so we're glad to finally have that delivered. For us, it's great because it's going to give us more flexibility. We're no longer have to deal with the app stores. That's always been a whole bunch of issues with updates and all that nonsense. So that's good for everyone, and we're happy that everyone asked for it. Now, the next thing, the nodes of the game tree. Basically, what we found really annoying when playing DTO was like, you see that you see you take this line with hand X, and you're like, wait, I kind of want to know what do I do with other hands in my range. So basically, now what we've made visible is every node you go down, whether that's the checking node or the big bet node or the small bet node, it's now clickable, and you can see the entire strategy of all the hands. You get it, you click on it, you get the grid. It's going to show you which hands, then you can select the hand, and it's going to show you what to do with each combo, in which range it goes. And yeah, I'm really excited for that as well, because this is the one feature everyone's been asking for.
So that's okay, that. Give us the exclusive.
The exclusive is, there have been a couple of rumors what it could be, and well, I can't fully reveal it. There were some good guesses, like a couple of people guessed Heads Up, and a couple of other people guessed ICM.
I guess that it would unlock some nudes of Dominic Nietzsche. Was I close?
Yeah. No. Then the other people guessed RTA. Both of those I can confirm are not correct. No, the good guesses I liked were Heads Up, and there was someone who said ICM, and I think those are really good, because I think if you look at what's missing from the app to be like a really good training tool, you couldn't practice Heads Up so far, and ICM you couldn't practice either, because right now you are only playing Chip EV and you have Chip EV ranges. But if you really want to take it to the next level, where the range viewer thingy that we just talked about is one thing, and the other thing would be certainly, for me as a professional, I want to know how like ICM influences change this as well. You know, I want to like have a couple of final table setups, and I want to practice like real final table play, because I don't see that in the poker landscape right now. So actually, I've revealed it. It's ICM related stuff, and I think Dara might like that.
Well, I was going to say, Dara, I wanted to ask you, what do you hope it would be? Because you and I both use DTO regularly as a training tool.
Yeah, I think it would be great if it was ICM, and I agree with Dom that this is the one thing that's missing. It's almost like the poker world has forgotten about ICM to a large degree. We've kind of gone down this Chip EV PO route because that was the shiny new toy. Tom Hall spoke about this on the last thing too. Like, we all came up to sit and goes, etc. So we got expert, or at least as expert as you could be back in the day on ICM pre-solver. But now in a lot of tournaments, there's very little ICM at any point until the bubble and you get near the final table. So for 99% of the time, you're just playing a normal strategy. Yet the biggest money decisions are obviously around the bubble and as you get deep into the tournament near the final table. And those are spots which people have sort of forgotten and they're not particularly good at. I have a vested interest in this because the third book that I'm working with on Barry at the moment is on ICM specifically. But I was speaking to Michael Acevedo recently too, who wrote, to my mind, the best poker book of the last few years, best poker strategy book, Modern Poker Theory. And he told me that he was getting very interested in ICM as well. He's sort of moving away from the GTO approach, which underpinned Modern Poker Theory, and now looking more at ICM. I think people realize, as Pad said recently, I think on Ben CB's podcast, just how much money is in ICM, and that if you really want to make a big difference to your bottom line as a tournament player, learn ICM, get those spots down, and don't worry too much about what you should be three betting 100 big blinds deep when UTG opens and you're UTG plus one. That's not going to make a massive difference to your win rate, but getting your ranges wrong on a final table or on a bubble could cost you several buy-ins.
Yeah, and it's certainly the area of poker that's least susceptible to real-time assistance and is probably going to grow and maybe become the one that people feel safest in for recreational players out there. Tournaments may well become the format that they most feel like they have a chance and they most enjoy and hopefully, you know, do genuinely have a chance as well. The one thing I wanted to talk about that was because, you know, when you break down poker, I guess the two aspects that stand out about tournaments is that you have to play the different stacks all the way down to the very shortest ones. And ICM, they're the two components. And you're right, like we do spend a lot of time of like, what's your opening range with 30 bigs, 50 bigs? They are things that are kind of off discussed, but ICM even now, what, 14 years on, Dara, from our sit and go early days, where I think we were pretty good at it of the time, probably realized we made a lot of mistakes in retrospect, but you know, compared to other people, we're pretty good at it. Now it's becoming maybe the biggest area of improvement for people. Dom, why are you trying to wreck this for us as well?
Because I think, as Dara said, it's completely unexplored, and I couldn't agree more with anything you said. I just want to add a couple more points. Field sizes in online tournaments, there is more and more smaller fields. Like, especially at the buy-ins I play, you play a lot of, a lot of like 40-player fields. So being good at ICM is even more crucial because you just do end up getting to the final table more often. And if you're consistently at a final table, it's just like the sit and go practice. That's what you need to be good at.
Yeah.
So, yeah. One more thing I also wanna say about the podcast is, they're right before they said that like the 100 big blind stuff is not important. Realistically, what you should be focusing on is like 40 big blinds and below. Like you get that down chippy V, you play that well, and yeah, then you should really practice your ICM. ICM is important. Unfortunately, up until this day, I don't think anyone has really released anything ICM related that's that good. And I think that's the reason why it's so unexplored. I think people are a bit hesitant to actually do like the actual work. Because I don't think there's been like a preflop solver out there capable of handling ICM for the longest time. And then also, they've been out there for a while, but like doing these ICM sims in a preflop solver is a lot of work because you have to run all the different stack sizes, and then you have to like adjust the payout structure, and it's a lot of work that people haven't done so far, and I think that's why. But the reason that chippy V ranges are out there is because a couple of people decided they could like just plug it in a solver and run it and sell it for a lot of money. That's why that is out there. People don't really do it themselves, do they?
No, it's a good point.
Like you just need some guy to run it, and then it's out there. And I guess that's us this time.
you and Darren now, you're both cornering the same market now, and I look forward to both pieces of content. Final story.
We'll collaborate.
Larry, yeah, no doubt you might. Final story, because we do like to keep the lights on here at the lock-in. The Unibet Open is this Sunday. This episode is hopefully coming out on Saturday. So if so, it's tomorrow. It's an €1,100 buy-in. It's a two-day event. It has a new and improved structure. Darren and I lobbied hard internally for this. We liked the fact that the Unibet Open was the two-day structure last time round, but it did probably bang along a bit too quickly through the middle and late stages and was probably too deep at the start. So we've repaired that. We have a 15-minute clock day one, 20-minute clock day two. That should be a lot better than the 12-minute clock throughout that you saw the last time. There are loads of satellites, super satellites going to be run for this. So hop on those. They're going to be really soft. There might be some juicy overlay in them as well. There is a 250K guarantee on it. I think it's going to smash it. The last one got about 350K. I think this will be the same, if not more. Dara, are you looking forward to this one?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I would like to pay tribute to how much you lobbied internally to get the structure changed. There were quite a few gripes, let's say, after the first one about the structure. It was a little back to front. I believe you had to threaten to go on hunger strike to get Unibet to revolt. And anybody who knows how much you enjoy food know how serious that would have been for you. But yeah, I think it will be a great tournament. The satellites have been running. Lots of recreational players I know have already qualified, and they're excited to play. I think it'll be a huge success. Tom Hall, again, keep harking back to our previous guest, but he did say he thought it would be the softest 1K for quite a while online, and I think that's probably true. Last time out, we did have a very good final table and a heads up, which unfortunately didn't last too long, but Max Silver overcame our good friend Jamie Nixon. So yeah, I think this is something to get excited for, a good well-structured 1K over 2 days. a lot of the recreational pool in Unibet have already satellited in through feeders, which again is what you want in a 1K. You don't just want all the ballers and beasts turning up on the day and everybody watching to see which of them flips well that day. Yeah, so really looking forward to it this weekend.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it as well. And you're right, there are a huge number of satellite qualifiers. They've been qualifying for the last 3 months. So looking forward to doing battle with them. Hopefully there's a fantastic story in there, a big parlay maybe from someone who did a €1 satellite or a €5 satellite all the way to a final table. Fingers crossed. Dominic, are you going to play it? Say you're going to play it even if you're not.
I don't know. Is this my place to comment? I don't know. I mean, I'm always just, I think like the tournament itself is a great idea. I think just overall, I think this is the future. Like having like a 1K buy-in is great, and having like tons of satellites leading up to it, I personally think this is a great model for tournaments. And every site that tries to run this, I think they got a good thing going for them. I think this is the future, and I don't really see it in like the higher buy-ins, but this is like a whole different conversation we could be having another time. I wish you guys the best of luck with it, because I like the idea. I like that you run satellites for months. I like the buy-in. 2-day tournament is great. I hope this works, and yeah, I want to see other sites follow that model as well.
Yeah, I do think one of the few positives that's come out of this pandemic is that the online operators have sort of taken on board some of the practices from the live poker world. In live poker, it's fairly normal to have like a big event and then months and months before in the catchment area for that tournament, they run satellites in clubs and casinos or whatever. So you end up with a big event on the day. The sites have sort of run with that as well now. And that appeals to a different type of player, the type who doesn't want to necessarily grind every night. They just want to put a few quid on a site, take a few shots at satellites. And then if they manage to get in, they have something to look forward to.
Well, in the spirit of all the ambassadors holding hands here, I do wish you the best of luck with the 888 series as well. I hope it's been a good success and continues to be. And we thank you hugely for coming on the show. The Unibet Open will hopefully have a Twitch stream on the Monday looking at the day two stuff. If Dara, Ian or myself aren't still playing, we will do a bit of commentary. So please tune into that as well if you get a chance. Dominic Nietzsche, thank you so much for coming on and talking about some, well, fairly difficult stuff and complicated stuff, and hopefully educating our audience and maybe helping us understand some of the difficult stuff much more easily.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I just really felt like there was a couple of things that needed to be said, and I think you guys did a good job, because I was watching, I probably shouldn't go down this road again, but I was watching the Berkey podcast, and it was pretty shocking how wrong he was about some of his stuff. We didn't touch on that.
That's perfect. You just teed it.
Oh, well.
We'll get him on next week and we'll
hit him on the way out. Okay, at one point, Berkey said that he thinks DTO could easily be turned into RTA because we have all the solutions. Yeah, and then he alleged to me possibly being one of the banned accounts. I just want to say to that this is not entirely how this works. Yeah, for one, there is only 200 flops in DTO, and in real poker, there is 1,755. The other thing I want to say to that is that it would be nice if like people who don't really know what they're talking about when it comes to RTA would probably sit this one out and let the experts do the talking, which is a good way to end this on, because when people get involved that don't know what they're talking about, they will start shouting, "What these evil charts!" And yes, ban all these pros, they're all evil cheaters, but you are actually not qualified to comment on things you don't have an opinion on. So maybe better to sit this one out.
Well, Dara, I love that. He just as he's walking out the door of our makeshift shooter, he's firing all the shots.
Firing shots over his shoulder.
We have plenty to talk
about. I'll be back.